Bikini Atoll, Pacific Ocean, July 22, 1946. For weeks, the 42,000 soldiers had been preparing. They had relocated the 11 local families who lived on Bikini Island, a lush tropical paradise with ice-blue water, white sand beaches, and coconut trees. Bikini was one of a handful of pristine islands that circled the lagoon, part of the Pacific Ocean's Marshall Islands chain. The Navy had decided it was the perfect target for testing atomic bombs. The 161 islanders, many of them simple fishermen, had been assured that the move would be temporary, which everyone believed. Now the soldiers dressed in khakis stood on deck. They peered through their binoculars, their sights trained on the ghost fleet of ships they had towed into the harbor a few weeks earlier. They were 9 miles offshore, and the ships looked tiny, like toys. But the visibility was good today, even with the tinted goggles they had been issued to protect their eyes during the blast. The radio station they had set up to record their impressions was ready. That morning, their families back home had been assured by the Vice Admiral that the undersea bomb will not start a chain reaction in the water, converting it all to gas. It will not blow out the bottom of the sea and let all the water run down the holes. It will not destroy gravity. The seamen were proud to be part of such an important operation. As the countdown began, they tensed in anticipation. And then they saw it. A blast of white light, followed immediately by a frothing, seething mushroom cloud of sea spray that shot into the sky. It was spectacular. The foaming, boiling column of water kept widening. It engulfed the tiny ships in the distance and for a moment blotted out the blue of the sky. Then, quite suddenly, the winds shifted. Instead of being out of range of the fallout, the troops found themselves directly downwind. Spray rained down on the deck and drenched the soldiers' clothes. They were hit with bits of coral and small stones and debris from the explosion. But no one was worried. The rain of rubble and lethal seawater was over quickly. And most soldiers had never even heard of the word radioactive. Within hours of the blast, the seamen were fast at work, steaming toward the island, eager to record the nuclear bomb's effects. Some of the ghost ships had sunk. Others were blasted with holes, scorched tar black, their metal fittings melted into grotesque shapes. The lambs and pigs they had put on board had oozing burns, lesions covering their bodies. Many were dead and were already beginning to bloat. For the rest of that summer, it was wickedly hot. Often the mercury rose to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The soldiers swam in the Blue Lagoon to cool off. They washed their clothes in it and used it to cook their food. Often when they worked, they shed all but their Navy-issued khaki shorts. Over the next 11 years, the American military conducted repeated atomic tests at Bikini, detonating hundreds more bombs, including one on March 1, 1954, which was 1,000 times more powerful than the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. On that day, the winds had shifted again, and the soldiers and islanders on neighboring atolls had been blanketed with fine white ash. The children had played in it as if it were snow. It was an innocence whose imminent loss would signal the beginning of a new consciousness. The potential for the extinction of all nature had arrived as blindly as that white, wind-borne ash. Maine, summer 1962. It was midnight when the lone, auburn-haired woman arrived on the beach. Tall and stooped, just shy of 55, Rachel Carson looked considerably older than her years. She swayed a moment as she sat, drank in the briny air. To feel the full wildness, she switched off her flashlight. Then, adjusting her eyes to the darkness, she turned her attention to the swell and roar of the sea. Tonight it was full of diamonds and emeralds, flecks of phosphorescence that wave after wave hurled onto the sand. The individual sparks were huge. She could see them glowing in the sand or sometimes caught in the in-and-out play of water, sluicing back and forth. This is what Carson lived for, bearing witness to the natural world in all its mystery,